opinions and views expressed by the host and guest are not necessarily the views and opinions of the Blake Radio Network. Broadcasting to the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul.
Space is a place that only a human being locates, where there's so much information to take. Then you enter an entirely new phase. Once you get off the internet, become World Wide Web.
Welcome to the Cyberspace Sanctuary, a safe house for your mind. I'm your host and facilitator, Junius Ricardo Stanton, inviting you to stay tuned for interesting interviews, news you can use, and programming designed with you in mind. Free your mind, the rest will follow, right here on the Cyberspace Sanctuary on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Gold.
Cyberspace is the place. Cyberspace is the place.
This is Professor Griff. You're listening to Junius. Ricardo Stanton. Straight up, we're teaching you all those things you need to know from the neck up, all right? We're definitely doing a checkup from the neck up. This is Professor Griffin, Public Enemy, the ex-minister. I'm out. Peace.
Welcome to the Cyberspace Sanctuary, a safe house for your mind, here on Rainbow Soul on the Blake Radio Network. My name is Junius Ricardo Stanton. I'm your host and facilitator. We started off the program with our message in the music, LTD, Love to the World Prayer. And as we transverse these times, we definitely need love and prayer. Our guest is Cynthia McKinney, and we'll speak with her following these messages. Don't go anywhere. You're logged on to the Cyberspace Sanctuary, a safe house for your mind, on the Blake Radio Network's Rainbow Soul. Stay tuned. Hi, I'm Junius Ricardo Stanton, inviting you to join me in financially supporting the Blake Radio Network on a regular basis. We need your continuing patronage to help the Blake Radio Network remain alive and thriving both now and well into the future. There are several easy ways you can send your contribution. To use PayPal, click on the help link on the Blake Radio Network's website at www.blakeradio.com. Or you can go directly to the PayPal website and click the send money link. Type in rainbowsoul@blakeradio.com as the email address and Unlimited Ventures as the payee. Then follow the instructions. To send a check or money order, make it out to Unlimited Ventures, care of Neil Blake, and mail it to 73 Ireland Place, that's Ireland Place, Suite 109, Amityville, Amityville, New York, 11701. It's easy, painless, and uncomplicated. And you'll feel great after doing it, knowing you're keeping the Blake Radio Network alive and on the cutting edge of media technology. I'm Junius Ricardo Stanton, thanking you in advance for your support. Our guest is former Green Party presidential candidate and former 4th Congressional District in Georgia, Congresswoman Cynthia McKinney. Welcome to the program.
Thanks, Ricardo.
We're living in some interesting times, and I've seen some of your scathing articles in regard to the United States' latest foray into imperialism and war, and also your defense of Mr. Gaddafi. So share with our listeners your take on this latest fiasco from a moral and fiscal point of view.
Well, some people are moved by fiscal concerns, and I find that inappropriate when the question of morality exists. And basically, with respect to Libya, all I have done is outline the realities of the Pan-African relationship with Libya. This is something that, of course, I have been involved in sort of domestic electoral efforts, but I have been associated with people who were sheltered by Gaddafi's Libya when they were tortured by the United States of America's government. And I'm speaking primarily of people involved with the All African People's Revolutionary Party, people involved with the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, and people involved with the Black Panther Party. People who are active in these organizations have a long-standing relationship with Muammar Gaddafi that goes back for generations. In addition, I didn't mention the Nation of Islam.
Right, right.
But Louis Farrakhan himself outlined the tremendous amount of money that had been given to the Nation of Islam, and I would presume that continues to be given to the Nation of Islam to this day. So it would appear that the little bit of the modicum of dignity and pushback on U.S.-style apartheid that we have been able to accomplish since the official inauguration of the counterintelligence program has in large measure been supported by Muammar Gaddafi. Now, you won't see that on Democracy Now. You won't hear that on any of the, regular, in quotation marks, radio shows. You won't see that on Wolf Blitzer, CNN, or Fox, for that matter, or any of the other special interest media. And now what we are discovering is that we've got special interest media that spans the political spectrum. We've got special interest media on the far right, in the center, on the left, and on what some would call the medium left. And so across this political spectrum, you are not hearing the black historical relationship that I felt that it was important to write.
Well, when it comes to foreign relations, it seems typically that special interest media ignores black people or poo-poos any contributions by conscious black people to that whole narrative. So that's not really that unusual, because they did the same thing with Martin Luther King when he spoke up against the Vietnam War.
Well, you're absolutely right. And we don't even have to go back that far, because if you look at some of the more institutionalized progressive media outlets, for example, if you look at Democracy Now!, I could probably count on my two hands the number of times, probably on one hand, the number of times that I have been asked to be on that show in the entire 12 years that I was in the United States Congress. Once it became clear that I had been targeted by the pro-Israel lobby, then there is a censorship that takes place across the board. And I know about that one. There probably exists another kind of censorship as well for across the board if one has been labeled in any kind of way that those who are the owners of media do not appreciate.
That's quite obvious to most thinking people, because even if you look at a supposedly bastion of quote-unquote liberalism, NPR or PBS, very rarely on their news program do you see any anti-war representation. Very rarely do you see any indigenous empowerment representation. Very rarely do you see any serious independent black thought representation on the NewsHour or any other PBS program.
But Junius, here's the thing. You qualified your statement by saying thinking people. But I have friends who are definitely in the category of thinking people. They are thinking, they are conscious, they are analytical, and only now are they becoming aware of what's missing from Democracy Now!, for example. And that is because Democracy Now's coverage, starting with Côte d'Ivoire, was straight from the established special interest press talking points. And there was never any question about the veracity of the election results. There was never any serious study of what the internal situation was that would give rise to the current situation where Gbagbo is holed up, the current president, Laurent Gbagbo, is holed up in his residence being threatened by forces, both domestic and mercenary, from the presumed winner of the election, Alassane Ouattara. But there was also never any question from the so-called progressive press, like Democracy Now!, of who these people are. Who is Alassane Ouattara? Who is Laurent Gbagbo? And to give some historical context of the efforts to create chaos in Côte d'Ivoire, an opportunity to educate the listeners was not taken. And I have friends who, it was only at that point that they began, because I was talking to them and giving them, I had given them my experiences with Côte d'Ivoire, and they had begun to look into the situation. And this was long, this was when there was the initial problem. And then they began to watch the coverage on Democracy Now!, and they, you know, began to cringe and cringe and cringe and say, oh my, please don't let it be so. Please don't let it be so. And eventually now they have come to the conclusion that Democracy Now! Is a part of what we would call the controlled opposition, at least in respect to what they did not do, the information that was readily available that they did not provide to their listeners with respect to Côte d'Ivoire. And then one had, when one looks into Alassane Ouattara, then you go back into the history and you see that the Constitutional Council, which is the highest, sort of like the Supreme Court, years ago ruled that he was not even eligible to run as a citizen. Nothing changed. The law didn't change, but the outside pressures were such that Laurent Gbagbo, the Constitutional Council, never relented and never repealed their initial decision. It was a political decision by Laurent Gbagbo, which ends up being a mistake, that put Alassane Ouattara on the ballot, that allowed then the opportunity for election fraud to be carried out. Wow. And no entities know better election fraud than folks right here in the United States. They've tried it all over the world, and we pulled it off successfully, including right here inside the United States.
You're absolutely right. And the thing about it, I think Gbagbo was put in a position because he knew these forces were galvanizing and mobilizing against him. They had just gone through a civil war, and I think he tried to be accommodating to make sure there was some inclusion, and that opened the door for all the machinations, because Ouattara is what the former director of the World Bank. So you know whose interests he's operating in. And so that's why the media is so enamored with him and keep putting out the party line that Côte d'Ivoire, the only thing they export is cocoa beans, when in fact...
And that's a lie.
I know. The real issue is about oil.
Absolutely, because Côte d'Ivoire has offshore oil that is reputed to be as the quality of the sweet crude of Nigeria. In addition to that, I personally received a phone call from Alassane Ouattara while he was aboard Henry Kissinger's yacht. And this was at a time when they were trying to buy, lease, sell, or allow me to give to them or give away the reputation for human rights and fairness and all that I had built up while I was in the Congress. And so, anyone who said, I don't get invited to Henry Kissinger's yacht. And of course, one would understand when one looks at his wife, Dominique, who is a Zionist. So here we have a cabal that is operating behind the face of Alassane Ouattara in very much the same way that we have a cabal that's operating behind the face of Barack Obama.
So they're the same people, and what they do is they play both sides and they pony up money to both candidates. Now, I'm not saying Bagbo is in cahoots with them. At this point, he's someone who is standing in the way of what they want, which is the oil. So, as you well know from personal experience, when you stand in the way of these psychopaths, they will do anything and everything to get you out. And so that's what we're seeing in Libya. That's what we're seeing in Cote d'Ivoire, which we're seeing all over the world. And I wanted to just touch on the role of what you call the special interest press, which I call the mind control apparatus, because...
That's right.
When you look at... things from, that's why I said a fiscal and moral situation. When you look at the fact that Libya is one of a handful of countries that is not caught up in the Bank of International Settlements web, the Rothschild central banking web, and you add oil to the mix, but the fact that this is a crusade against what some people are calling the class of civilizations, meaning the Bank of International Settlements, IMF, World Bank, thuggery versus an indigenous banking system. And a lot of it is, in some cases, based on Muslim law. And in the case of North Korea and Iran, North Korea is just a choice not to get involved. So... you'll never hear that on Democracy Now. You'll never hear them talk about that on Bloomberg, and you'll never hear them talk about it on CNBC.
I think former CIA analyst Ray McGovern said it well when he said, OIL, oil, Israel, and logistics for neocon domination. And I think we have to look at each one of those aspects, because it's not only oil, because you can see the presence of the U.S. military in places that don't have oil, but they have something else. You can see the presence of the U.S. military in places, for example, and you can see U.S. policy being pulled by the interests of Israel, too. And so if it is, for example, a country that has a sizable Muslim population, then you're going to find U.S. interests there. And the will of the people will definitely be subverted. For example, you don't have the institution of a no-fly zone, or you should have had an institution of a no-fly zone when Chevron had helicopter gunships killing people in Nigeria. But you also, in Nigeria, don't have an equitable distribution of wealth, of the oil wealth. And in Libya, after the cessation of the sanctions, the people enjoy free health care, free education, subsidized. If you want to go out of the country and study, then the government will pay not only the tuition, but your living expenses while you're in school. Free and subsidized housing. You can see the cranes that they're rapidly building apartment complexes, and that's housing for the people. People will have a place to stay. And they view the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, at least in terms of the provision of these, the way it was explained to me, if people have their basic needs met, then they don't have to steal or commit other crimes against each other.
Yeah, well, that's a higher level thinking, but that doesn't apply to the sociopaths and psychopaths that are actively recruited and put up as stooges. You mentioned the same cabal behind Ouattara as is behind Barack Obama, and I think more and more to see just how criminal this man is, and in many instances he has demonstrated that he's worse than his predecessor, and that's really scary.
Well, the black person who was put in charge of the slaves on the plantation was always worse, and he had more liberty to be harsher, because that liberty had been given to him by Massa. And what also makes President Obama worse is that the hopes and dreams and the aspirations of people have been betrayed, because people really didn't vote for him to have their wealth sucked away by that same financial elite cabal to whom he has promised trillions of dollars. They did not vote for him in order to have not only a continuation of the Bush wars, but the creation of additional wars. They did not vote for him in order to have the policy result that we have now. However, we also have to admit, Junius, that there are some black people who are happy just having a black man in the White House, no matter what he does to them. It is the same as being happy to have a black man put in charge of the plantation, no matter how the slaves are treated. And so this is something that we have to contend with in our community. And I believe that Glenn Ford wrote it well when he said, this is a point at which we in the black community have to decide what is important to us, policy or position. If we're happy with having a black person in a certain position and they don't do anything for us, in fact, they even have license to support policy against us, then that's, you know, all that some of us need to expect, if that's the community consensus. However, if the community consensus is that we want more out of the struggle for us to be able to cast a reasonably equitable vote, then that pushes us into the realm of critical analysis of policy. And we have to push all of our elected officials in the realm of policy. But that is something that we do not do. This was known by Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. because he even said that we have to push for right of the Negro to vote in Mississippi, but the Negro has to have something for which to vote in New York. And that something for which to vote is the policy, is the reason that we engage in the first place. The fight for the right to vote in the South was not just so we could go through the motions of casting a vote so it could be stolen, or so we could always lose and not have representation. The point was for policy. And until we practice politics with a view toward the policy, then we are practicing, in my opinion, the politics of self-abnegation, a politics of which I want to have no part.
Well, to that end, you ran as a third-party candidate on the Green Party last presidential cycle. And I was appalled that they marginalized all the third-party or non-cabal-sanctioned candidates. And so it's becoming more and more obvious that there is a corporate domination over the political process, to the point that I say that the United States is basically a banana republic. And so until more and more people wake up and realize that we're just going to find ourselves deeper and deeper in the hole, and the situation with the so-called Tea Party, where people who have had a legitimate and genuine concern about the direction of the country have been co-opted by billionaires like the Koch brothers, like the Kraft family, and so many others, and are being used as pawns to bring about the further impoverishment and the dismantling of the middle class, is really tragic. But as you say, because the special interest media and the mind control apparatus has convinced people that their activism is successful, we're going to end up in worse shape than we were a year or so ago.
Well, it seems that, you know, you described my op-ed that I wrote as scathing. And the last time I felt like this was under a Democratic presidency under Bill Clinton, where I also had to write a scathing letter, except that time I was in the Congress and it carried more weight. And it was referencing Bill Clinton's Africa policy. And so there's a certain, how can I say, a certain policy kind of behavior that Democrats are allowed to get away with particular respect to Africa, that the Republicans were bad, Herbert Walker Bush, George W. Bush, but the Democrats seem to be worse.
You're right, and it's the same, you know, you alluded to Clinton, and my observation is that Obama has recycled many of the old Clinton participants, people like Susan Rice, a lot of the people on the economic sphere, the Larry Summers, the Geithners, the Larry Rubin, and that crew puts him in the same league and even worse than Clinton. In fact, he's duplicating the Clinton policy, the air war that Clinton and the so-called Western allies did in Kosovo, is the same thing he's doing in Libya with the air war, only I think eventually he's going to put boots on the ground to secure the oil and the water on behalf of the oil for the corporations and the water on behalf of who knows whom, more, you know, possibly Israel, because they need water. So
and logistics.
Oh, yeah.
Don't leave out the logistics.
Well,
because
logistics
right now, AFRICOM doesn't have a home.
Right, other than Djibouti, and that's the I didn't see Libya coming. I thought they were going to use the situation in Cote d'Ivoire to establish AFRICOM. So now you have two for the price
of right.
one.
That's right. That's right.
So, I don't see the African community talking about that too much. The African in America community talking about the logistics, about AFRICOM, or holding Obama's feet to the fire. I'm seeing several columns, as you said, Glenn Ford, Bill Reed. I've been writing about it. You've been writing about it. I'm wondering, do you think our people are waking up?
Well, the depth of the nightmare is such that if one doesn't wake up, one chances becoming economically, culturally, socially, and politically irrelevant. So one had better wake up. And if one wakes up, is only waking up now, it's long overdue.
Well, do you think that the economics, you know, because everything is connected, they may not get it with Libya, although the whole Orwellian, we're bombing them to save them kind of mentality, and now we're finding out that the United States is actually bombing infrastructure, they're arming the rebels, and they've even, on some occasions, bombed the so-called rebels that they claim to be attempting to protect and save. So, you know, there's people, like Morpheus said in the Matrix, people know something is wrong, but do you think that they'll make the wider connection when they look at the economic policies here in this country, the domestic policies, because we just went through that charade about the so-called threat of a shutdown, when in fact it's really a scam, so that will give them impetus to even do more draconian cuts, to really do away with the New Deal and Great Society type programs, while at the same time they do everything, bend over backwards to cut taxes on the corporations and the super rich, like we're seeing, like what happened in Wisconsin, what's going to happen in Pennsylvania, same scenario, that these lobbyists and these groups like the American Legislative Executive Committee that are funded by the very cabal that we're talking about, the Koch brothers, Kraft family, the corporations like Coca-Cola, and on and on and on, that are behind the scenes, nevertheless, people will see the impact of the policies. And it gets back to that word policy and awareness and activism as opposed to passivity.
Well, you know, it's becoming more and more difficult for me, but I have not yet lost the confidence of let's put it this way. I understand the power of the people, and for us to be able to have a discussion like this and for people to hear us talking, I believe it will help to open the eyes of some people, because all they have to do really is go back and look. If they don't believe the content of our conversation, they can do their own research. It's what, you know, I want people to do anyway. And once they begin to do their own research and understand that what you and I are discussing is literally based on facts, the facts as they are not presented, as they are almost never presented in the press, then I believe that the people will recognize the power that they have. The power inherently rests with the people. And that's why we have this mind control apparatus, as you call the press, because they want to suppress the power of the people. And the best way to do that, really the best way to do that, is to depress the people so that then you can follow up with oppressing the people. And you don't really need bullets to do that. The people can do that themselves if they are so conditioned. And that is the purpose of the mind control apparatus, as you call it so correctly.
Well, Stephen Biko said the greatest weapon in the arsenal of the oppressor is the mind of the oppressed. And we're seeing that as we talk about the suppression and the ignorance and the marginalization of the facts and the creation of an alternative reality, the what I call the matrix. And so it becomes incumbent upon people to take the red pill, to move beyond the matrix, to begin to think for themselves and to take action on their behalf, because otherwise, we will continue to support our own oppression. We will continue to fund our own oppression by participating in this economy, by participating in sham, you know, banana republic type election processes. And I'm not saying don't get involved. I'm more so get involved on the local level. But anytime you have a system where, as you well know, the average person can't run for Congress. The average person won't get any money unless you somehow let the Israeli lobby know that you're okay with what they're doing around the world, in the region, and particularly in Palestine. You won't get any money unless you make it clear that you want to further this system. And you'll go along with the okey-doke. I mean, that's the primary reason that you're not in Congress today. And really, I'm glad you're not, because you'd be victim to what Lonnie Grenier called the tyranny of the majority. I mean, the majority of people there have acquiesced to fascism and the corporate control, and there are more because they've come up through the ranks and they've gotten seniority. They bought into it, and they're benefiting handsomely for selling the people out.
Yes, but that still doesn't mean that we shouldn't try, and that still doesn't mean that we should challenge them, because we really only have one opportunity to challenge them. There's only one opportunity to try and get them out of office. They don't deserve to be there if they're not representing us. And if they're not representing the interests of the people, that's why it's so important that we have an apparatus to inform the people. That informed public undergirds the representational qualities of our government. And if we don't have a government that is representational, we clearly also don't have an informed public.
Well, keeping them honest and responsible. What's your take on the recent vote in Wisconsin, and where you had all of a sudden this so-called human error on this vote for the Supreme Court?
I'm sorry, I am not familiar with the vote in Wisconsin for the Supreme Court.
Okay, now there was a hotly contested election, I think. Partly because of what it was coming down to a referendum on the newly elected governor, who had taken on the American Legislative Executive Committee's agenda to attack public unions. And as a result, I think the lady looked like she had a slight edge, a couple of hundred votes edge, and it was going to be contested supposedly with a recount. But then this lady who was a county clerk who used to work for the opponent, the opposition, claimed that she, there was a miscount of several thousand votes, and this gave her former employee, her employer, the victory. So I'm just saying, in my other indication of, you know, just a banana republic kind of thing.
In a scenario like that, then people have to care enough to go to the next step. There must be point counterpoint. If there is a point and the people make a take a position with their votes, and then there is a counterpoint to defraud the people of the results, the rightful results of their vote, then there needs to be a counterpoint from people to that situation. And too often what happens is that people let things go. They let things slide. But we have to move in and not be afraid to do so. I mean, there are a few of us who are not afraid. And we, when we stood up as a people, how do you think we got Brown versus Board of Education if we did not stand up and do a point and a counter to their point? What about the Voting Rights Act, the Civil Rights Act? These things didn't happen in a vacuum. They happened because people stood up and there was backup to the stand up. So if we don't stand up and then back up our leaders who do stand up, then of course you're going to get run over.
Well, I agree. The question is, how do we encourage people to stand up, man up, and account up and be accountable for to one another and for the overarching agenda, which is anti-oppression, moving toward liberation? Because the civil rights struggle, the struggle for human rights in the South, was backed up by one of the more powerful institutions that we had, which is the church. Now, it wasn't unilateral. Obviously, the National Baptist Convention, they were very reactionary. But as you said, King and his associates pushed forward to the point that they could form something like SCLC and get around and counterpoint the reactionariness of Dr. Jackson and his National Baptist Convention. My question to you is, how do we encourage and galvanize people to take up the struggle? Because that's the only way we're going to make any impact and any change.
Well, clearly, people have to want it, first of all. And I will never forget the image that was invoked in my mind the first time I heard, I think it's a paraphrase, but someone mentioned Harriet Tubman freeing the slaves. She could have freed more if they were slaves.
Right.
And so people have to want to be free. And as I ride around the city of Atlanta, you know, I was out in California for a while, and I saw the police state that exists in the black community in Los Angeles, while high crimes and misdemeanors are committed every day in Washington, D.C., and there ain't no police going into the shops and going into the barber shops and harassing the perpetrators of those high crimes, as there is this presence in the black community, it was in Los Angeles. And then I go to Atlanta and I see the same thing. I see a totally depressed black community where black men are idle. They have nothing to do. Young blacks have brought into an entirely different culture. And I understand that this is a way to oppress, to deal with oppression. but it is a dysfunctional way to deal with oppression. One does not depress oneself in order to overthrow oppression. One has to aim the target for depression at the source of the oppression. And we haven't done that very well since the murder of our leaders as a result of concerted U.S. government effort.
Yeah, and I think that is in the back of the minds of some of the older people, and I think the younger people who have a natural inclination to resist just need leadership. Unfortunately, in this culture, the forces of oppression reward reactionary compliance and complicity with their program, meaning there are a lot of spoken word artists, a lot of hip hop artists who are conscious, but they can't, even despite their own efforts to go into the studio, press their own CDs, whatever, they can't get airplay on the controlled media. And so they have to use underground means to get their message out. And at the same time, they see these degenerate people who are promoting sociopathic lyrics, ideologies, and lifestyles being rewarded, and it can be frustrating, and it's particularly to people who, as you say, are depressed. And part one of the things about depression, you become lethargic, and so again, we get back to how do we energize our people.
The antidote to this is looking back at our history and what successful slave rebellions, successful moments in the civil rights movement, what did they have in common? One of the easiest things that they had in common was nothing more than unity. Unity is a powerful antidote. We know that the reward comes in selling out. The physical financial reward goes to those who sell out. And then there is a higher reward that doesn't allow some people to sell out, because, you know, I had many opportunities where people came to me as a part of that cabal trying to co-opt me. I mean, the phone call from Henry Kissinger's yacht was one of them. But if we were able to demonstrate just a little more unity, we could get so much further down. We could kick our policy aspirations farther down the field. We could actually score a goal or score a touchdown or two with unity. Unity can go a long way, but and the unity can actually animate and overcome the lethargy, because you see that lethargy in our community. But I believe if we were able to communicate a message of hope to those people who have given up and become hopeless, then that could be the critical mass we need. We don't need everybody.
Right.
We need enough people. We don't need to match them dollar for dollar, but we need enough money. And so I've been, you know, sort of trying to figure this out. But it's hard to even help people when they don't even know that you exist trying to help them.
Well, one of the things that you had the benefit of growing up in a household where you had an activist, an uncompromising set of parents. Your father was out in the forefront, but obviously he had his wife, your mother, being supportive of him when he was out there when there were times he could have been at home. And so you had the benefit of that. You're in his footsteps. It's in your DNA. And so you have that. There are a lot of people who didn't have that role model, who, even though the animating spirit within them is telling them to push, to go and have some hope, just one more day, just one more hour, just think about the possibilities, the world they bought into the matrix. And I guess our job is to encourage them to listen to that still small voice and to follow it and to let it lead them to a state of higher consciousness and ultimately liberation, even though the price is going to be steep and it's going to be a very challenging journey.
Yes. And so that's why, you know, sometimes I get down, to be honest with you. And I think that, you know, what the heck am I sacrificing for when, you know, I can't see the product of my sacrifice or the positive result of my sacrifice. And I know you sometimes have to ask the same question. And we get sustenance from each other, because I'll read one of your columns, or I'll read a word of inspiration from Carlos Muhammad on Love for Self. Has these daily inspirations, so I'll read one of those. Or, you know, there are days, and I know that all of us who sacrifice, we sacrifice, and the people we sacrifice for don't even realize that we exist. And we're steady sacrificing for them. and it's got to get you down sometimes. And we have to have our own way to cope. But thank goodness we can communicate in ways, we can touch each other in ways that don't even require a physical touch anymore. Just using the internet, and I can read a piece and get, you know, fired up for the day and say, yeah, at least I'm not out here alone. And that adds to my readiness to go out and do a little bit more.
Speaking of doing a little bit more, before we let you go, what's on the agenda for Cynthia McKinney? I know you're in constant demand. You know, number one, what's on your agenda? But number two, just share with us how you filter all these demands on your time and requests for your energy and your expertise, because you can't be in 1,000 places at once other than through the internet or something, or TV or something like that.
Yes. well, of course, election season is coming up, and those demands are increasing more and more to people want to know what is it that I'm going to do. So that requires a lot of introspection on my part, to, you know, sort of decide how that is going to go. And then, you know, factor in, you know, the impact of other things that I get asked to do. What's the impact? If the impact is good, then generally I'll try to accommodate the people who have come up with the idea.
Now, where can people find out what you're doing? You still have your website. You have, now you're involved with I think Facebook and some other mass social networking apparatus. So how can people find out what's going on with Cynthia McKinney?
Well, I guess the Facebook page is the best way to do it. I don't personally maintain it. There's a volunteer who does that for me, and she is very good. So I would, but now something has popped up. There's like a zillion Cynthia McKinney Facebook pages out there. And so what we've been trying to do is to eliminate the ones that are not maintained by her. So I didn't realize that this kind of thing was possible. We also have Dignity page, dignity.ning.com, and there's a MySpace page. And then there's my listserv, which is people can reach me and get on my own list at cynthia@runcynthiarun.org.
Okay, now when will you make a decision whether you or not you're going to get back into the electoral process?
Well, I will probably decide in the next month or a couple of months. I probably won't make the announcement until after that.
Okay. All right, well, keep us abreast of what you're doing, because we definitely want to be supportive of you and get the word out that there's are some righteous champions out there fighting the good fight. So we got to stick together and make sure that, like you said, we don't need everybody. We just need critical mass. And I believe that that is percolating under the surface. It may look bad. And I think maybe some of the conditions will force more and more people to wake up and become alive and energized.
Yes, and that's what I look forward to as well.
Okay, sister, we appreciate you being with us. You keep in touch, and I will definitely follow up with what we talked about earlier in the week.
Okay, I look forward to next time.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Cyberspace is a place that no army with artillery invades, where no military.
You've been listening to the Cyberspace Sanctuary, a safe house for your mind on the Blake Radio Network with Junius Ricardo Stanton. Thank you for logging on. We invite you to tune in again and engage in mental decolonization. Free your mind, the rest will follow.
That no corporation incorporates, no denomination faith dominates, and no court is going to try any.